Hello, everybody. This is Carrie with Unicorn Company. So today we're going to be covering a few things. First of all, there is something that just came up that I wanted to go ahead and, discuss. First of all, I want to go ahead and start with the BattleTech news. So first, we had a new release, the Helm Turning Points. This is a Turning Points book that discusses the Battle of Helm with the Grey Death Legion. Just to cover it a little bit, in it, it has an atlas, map sheet table associated with regions on the atlas, which is really nice, random assignment tables for the Grey Death Legion and the Free Worlds League, commander profiles including skills for both BattleTech and Alpha Strike, mechs and the special pilot abilities of each, unit profiles for both units that were involved. It has their experience levels, general unit composition, special rules, and command abilities. It also has the exact unit rosters for the forces on Helm if you wanted to fully recreate this in a historically accurate, if we can call it that, way. There are 6 scenarios that work with the Chaos Campaign system. 2 mini tech readouts, one for the AC-10 Vedette and another for the weapon/troop carrier Hover with record sheets for them. And it also has a hex-based campaign map of the planet, like the old Battle Force campaign maps or whatever they called it. And I think that's currently in Strategic Ops. So what I do like about this, it does harken back to the old days of the scenario packs. It has very much like an old 1990s, late 80s scenario pack feel to it, but it's way cleaner, way more streamlined, and really nice. Also, with the information they give you, you can either play the campaign or you can play your own campaign on Helm with terrain and everything accurate to the, you know, to the planet. After that, the recognition guides 19 to 24 were announced. They have an expected release date beginning October 15th, and after that, I think it's every 2 weeks. Some of the covers were also previewed. Volume 19 looks to have an Iron Cheetah on the front, which is an Omni. I don't even think it's an Omni Mech, at least the old version. We'll go into that later in the episode. It has Daishi legs and side torsos, a Timberwolf center torso, a Warhawk arm, and an Executioner arm. It's kind of interesting. Number 20 is going to have a Warhawk on the cover. 22, I think it's the Jade Phoenix from the Ilclan source book, but I'm not sure. And 24 is going to have an Atlas on it. So we're going to come back to this in a moment. Let me go into something else, though, real quick. So, okay, this is something that I just got information about, so I'm sort of interrupting where I would normally be. There is a tournament for Alpha Strike planned on November 6th to 7th of this year in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. It is being run by the people that run Fortress Games and Miniatures. As I get information about it, I will be more than happy to share that. I would like to invite people, though, to come out and, you know, play some BattleTech. Well, play some Alpha Strike in this case, which is still BattleTech. And, you know, I'll be there. So if anybody wants to meet me or anything, hey, you know, all 3 or 4 people that listen to me. So, you know, just wanted to bring that up. And like I said, it was something I didn't have it in the script or anything. I didn't know where to stick it. And this part of the script goes into a lot of stuff. So I figured it would just be good to bring it up now before we go into the deep dive on that beautiful, beautiful mech that they have on the cover of Volume 19. So, getting into that. The biggest piece of news about the rec guides, about the new ones that have been announced, is that in Volume 19, you have what looks like an Iron Cheetah on the front of the cover. Well, on the cover, of course, it's on the front, it's on the cover. But, you know, There's been a lot of speculation about it on the BattleTech forums and on the BattleTech subreddit. I personally think it's an Iron Cheetah. Now, if you're unfamiliar with it, let me explain. To an old girl like me, we remember seeing these along with a few other Franken-mechs, essentially, in the catalogs like MechForce UK, what was it, Ralpartha Europe, stuff like that. They really like to Frankenstein things over there. But, you know, David Fanjoy, Dave Fanjoy, I don't know why I called him David, but Dave Fanjoy is an American Battletech miniature painter who kitbashed one of these a few years back, and there were stats floating around for it. So originally, it was statted as a 100-ton battle mech with a 400 extra light engine. In its right arm, it had two ERPPCs and two medium pulse lasers, a Gauss rifle. In the left arm, I think, an LRM-15 in the right torso, anti-missile system in the left torso, and an ER small laser mounted center torso rear. For armor, it had 16 tons of ferrofibrous armor, an endosteel chassis, and 18 double heat sinks. So, if all my math is right, in Alpha Strike, this thing would be a battle mech, size 4, target movement modifier of 1, movement of 8, point value of 58, probably a Juggernaut, or a Sniper, actually, probably Juggernaut, short, medium, long, all of 6, overheat of 1, armor 10, structure 5, specials would be AMS, case, indirect fire 1, LRM of 111, and a rear of 110. So, like I said, I'm guessing, you know, it might be a Juggernaut, could even be a Brawler. Now, here's the thing. Given the emphasis on speed in the Arsenal of the Clans currently, I have a feeling we'll actually get something a little different. Mask or a supercharger, probably. And, you know, if they change the engine to a double extra light model, drop the endosteel, and upgraded the rear mounted ER small laser to an ER medium, this would work completely, and it would be an utter terror in a game of Alpha Strike or in Battletech for that matter. So when it finally does come out in October, I will have to revisit this episode, see if any of my predictions do come true. Personally, I'm glad to see another newish design, as this one may make it into the hands of Iron Wind Metals first, instead of coming out as a plastic in one of the sets, which would be really awesome, because Iron Wind does good work. People just talk about plastics all the time, and yeah. So, other products that we have releasing very soon include the spotlight on Smith's Petraries. I can't pronounce that word. Which should be releasing just before I release this podcast. Shrapnel number 6 is on the 15th of this month. Touring the Stars Granada is on the 17th. And Spotlight on Helion Keshik is going to be on the 24th. Now, I do find it interesting that so many small products are being released for the Scorpion Empire, which all of those little ones are, the last three I mentioned. But yeah, it is interesting. There's so many products covering the conflict between the Scorpion Empire and Aura Scorpion Imperial against the Hanseatic League. And part of me thinks that somewhere in the future, the Scorpions will be playing a key role in the Ilklan era. It may not come for a while, but I have a feeling that they will somehow become a conduit for the home clans to find out about the new Ilklan and make an appearance on the stage in the new era as a threat to the Inner Sphere clans, the Great Houses, and possibly the Scorpions. I really hope not, though, at least that they don't threaten the Scorpions, because every clan I have liked has had something terrible happen to them. The Warden Wolves ended up fighting in the Great Refusal and then were abjured. The Nova Cats joined the Star League only to become a vassal of the Draconis Combine, then to get shattered in a war of succession in that house. And I'm hoping the Goliath Scorpions don't suffer a similar fate when the home clans do eventually come onto the scene. I mean, thinking about that though, this is the first time in Battletech history. Well, I shouldn't say first time. This is the first time in since MechWarrior Dark Age, where we have no clue where things are going to go. Now, I know originally they had talked about doing a time jump, supposedly, to like 3250. It did not work that well when they did the last time jump, so it wouldn't be that great of an idea to hop us 100 years in the future. But, you know, what does the future really bring for, you know, not for the game itself, but for the in-game stuff, the universe? Like, what's going to happen with House Davian and House Kreta? You have this weird situation where, like, essentially you might end up with somebody like House Davian looking to this quote-unquote new Star League if they survive the Capellan Confederation rolling into Terra like a steamroller, looking to them and saying, hey, we have a Draconis Combine problem over here, and seeing as how you just handed the Cappies their ass, do you mind running over here real quick and putting them back across their border so we can have our capital back? Or is that something that's going to be taken care of in-house? The Scorpion Empire, for example, they are set up. They are a very large periphery state, and they're about halfway between the homeworlds and the rest of the inner sphere. They're set up to become like this weird power that could threaten either or be threatened by either or. Clan Novacat, another one of those clans that I liked that had really bad things happen to them, they are shattered beyond repair at this point. Well, beyond recognition. I wouldn't say beyond repair. I mean, if they can bring the Smoke Jaguars back from the dead with no problem at all, then I'm sure that they can somehow resurrect the Novacats. Probably looking a little different. But, you know, what happens with them? Like, because you have the refugees that made it to the Clan Protectorate. You have the Spirit Cats, who get along with the Nova Cats, but don't feel like they're Nova Cats, even though they call themselves Nova Cat. And then you have the state that they're inside of, the Free Worlds League, which is just now recongealing into a state and dealing with its own problems. And it sounds like they're going to be probably making moves on the Wolf Empire, since all that's left there is garrison clusters, you know. I mean, where is the future going to go for a lot of these factions, a lot of these groups? It seems crazy to me. But yeah, so, you know, that's just my random thoughts on this, and there's no scripting here, there's no nothing like that. Other than that, I did want to talk about one other thing, and Battletech is an odd universe in that if you look at other game systems like Warhammer 40K, well, it's the only one that comes to mind, actually. But if you look at the gorilla in the room, Warhammer 40K, it has very little positive representation at all of people, but of women, there's like nothing. You know, there's Sisters of Battle. And then there's Slaanesh demons that have, like, six breasts and claws and, yeah, it's just kind of weird. But Battletech is the other way around. We have had strong women characters. We have had strong men characters, obviously. Some of them have been overly sexualized. I will not, you know, I'm not going to lie. Some of them have not. And I think it's interesting. Like, if you look back at the fiction, the oldest fiction for Battletech, which, by the way, is not Sword and Dagger, which some people believe, but is actually the beginning of the Grey Death Trilogy, Decision at Thunder Rift. I have an old copy of that. I think it's an original. I don't know if it's first printing. It might be second printing, but I have an old, old copy of Decision at Thunder Rift. And in that, you have Lori Kalmar. And Lori, you know, she's not presented as like an end-all be-all super kick-ass warrior like Natasha Kerensky or anything like that, but she is somebody who is respected. She has growth. She, you know, she's a good character, and she's not hyper-sexualized, much like Natasha was, when you looked at all the art and everything. Mind you, the 80s art and 90s art wasn't the best. If y'all ever want a good laugh, look for Tex and George Ledoux looking at the old pictures of the art from Battletech. There is just some crazy stuff out there. And there was somebody who was really obsessed with, like, big teeth. But yeah, a lot of Farrah Fawcett hair, a lot of just craziness. And of course, Natasha has the famous spread in, I forget which one of the source books, where she is laid out across two pages. And yeah, and just about every depiction of her has been very, you know. But that brings me back to this whole representation in Battletech. And there's, you don't see much of it in war games, but there are women Battletech players, obviously. And something else that I find really fun is there are women Battletech commission painters. I'm one of them. And you all know me, obviously. But there are two other ones I wanted to mention. You know, in the last episode, because I did discuss in that about finding commission painters, what to look for and all that, I went ahead and I reached out to two commission painters. And I want to have these, well, I should say artists, because we are artists. But I really wish I could do an interview with them, maybe like all three of us at once, just talking about commission painting, stuff like that, Battletech. But I am not tech savvy enough, nor do I think my internet connection is reliable enough, because I live in the middle of nowhere, and, you know, that's just the way it is. But, you know, I had talked about what to look for, and I want to talk about both of these wonderful artists. The first one I want to talk about is Amelia. You can find her on Facebook at, I believe it's Minis by Amelia. Normally, she runs a Battletech painting event each year at Gen Con. This year, though, she won't be. And convention goers are going to have to miss out on that. Hopefully, next year, she'll be back. Amelia is also let me know that she prefers to do pop art style paint schemes. And I have seen some examples of her work on Facebook. She has done everything from canon schemes. I've seen football teams. I've seen mechs done in the style of the movie Frozen, the main characters. Right now, I know she's working on a Clan Ghostbear Alpha Galaxy unit. And while I don't have information directly on her pricing, I would highly recommend that you contact her directly via the link on her Facebook. The other person I want to talk about is Rally. She has Rally's Custom Mechworks. I believe that was it. Let me double check. Okay, I stand corrected. It's Rally's Mech Hanger Customs. And Rally does some amazing work. So while Amelia likes pop art, Rally does what I can only describe as high-impact Battletech miniatures. Imagine like the super bright Hot Wheels, but Battletech. And it's not bad. It's not like, oh my god, it's gaudy, it's horrible. No, it is amazing. So the first time I saw her work was on the Battletech Paintings and Customs Facebook group, where she did a reimagining of Clan Coyote using Aztec gods as the inspiration for the paint schemes. She's also recently done a Shadow Cat based on the paint scheme on, well, the paint job on a custom car. Don't know what kind of car it was, but it's beautiful. It's like purple and pink and has some other colors in it. So the Shadow Cat is probably going to carry a high price tag, though, as any other works like that will, because I know she has a lot of hours into it. Otherwise, she does have a standard cost of $20 per mini for painting miniatures. From the examples I've seen, it would be $20 well spent, and if you'd like to take a look at her work, you can find it on her Facebook group. I didn't ask if the $20 per miniature is custom jobs or if it is your basic canon paint schemes or if that included the miniature, because it looks like all the stuff she's done is on the plastics. So, I mean, mind you, I think on some of her stuff that you can see she's painted metal minis. I can't talk tonight, but yeah, so go ahead, take a look at her Facebook page and take a look at Amelia's. if you have like big group jobs, like big lots, talk to Rally as well. I don't know if she'll do any price lowering on that. And like I said, check and see if it's just her custom schemes or if it's something more generic, like your bog standard Canon schemes. So of course, the last thing for tonight, today, whatever it is where you're listening, is going to be the little section where I cover mechs. And yes, you did already get a whole little thing about the Iron Cheetah, which is an awesome mech, and we'll see what happens there. But you also do deserve your standard little bit of mech tech for the day. Well, actually, for the bi-weekly period, but who's counting, right? Today's mech tech segment, it was a name suggested by a fan. I like it, so we're going to use it. We're going to be looking at the Crusader. The Crusader is 65 tons of missile-throwing goodness. An older Star League design, it has seen a large number of variants since its introduction. We're going to look at two variants today, the CRD-8R N9R from Recognition Guide Ilclan Volume 1. The 8R has a pair of Artemis-guided LRM-15 launchers in the arms with two leg-mounted Streak SRM-6 launchers for extra short-range protection. For anti-infantry work, it carries two machine guns and a pair of medium lasers allow it to stay in the fight when it does run out of ammunition. In order to have all this throw weight with a top speed of 64 kilometers an hour, 12 tons of light ferrofibrous, it has to use an XL engine and an XL gyro, making it an easy nut to crack once you're through the torso armor. Now, the 9R takes this design in a slightly different direction. Using a double extra light engine, it pushes its speed up to a max of 86 kilometers an hour, roughly equivalent to a cavalry mech, at the cost of durability. The mech carries two LRM-15s and two light PPCs, one in each arm, and it also has two SRM-6s, one in each leg, and two machine guns in case it has to deal with infantry. Both the designs protect their ammunition with case 2, which makes them a bit more resilient than if they had standard case. Now, in Alpha Strike, the 8R, and mind you, some of this is going to be the same between them, but the 8R Battle Mech size 3, target movement modifier of 1, movement of 8, classified as a missile boat, has short and medium ranges of 4, long of 3, with an overheat of 2, armor 7, structure 3, and it costs 40 points. Oh, and it does have case 2 and indirect fire too. So it's pretty much in Alpha Strike, it's a standardish Crusader, decent indirect fire capabilities. Nothing that's extremely out of the ordinary, but also nothing that is, you know, it's not a run-of-the-mill Crusader either. It's not your baseline 3025 Crusader. Now, the CRD-9R, also type battle mech, size 3, target modifier of 2, movement of 10, also classified as a missile boat, short, medium, and long ranges are all 3, with an overheat of 1, armor of 6, structure of 2, because of the double extra light engine, has case 2, indirect fire 1, LRM capability of 111, and an SRM of 11. This comes in at 37 points. Now, it's a little bit less resilient than its 8R brother. The thing about it is, though, that with the 9R, you have more of a toolbox. So the 8R, you have indirect fire of 2, which is great. It's a decent indirect fire mech. But that's where your toolbox ends. That's where everything stops on this mech. With the 9R, your indirect fire capability goes down to 1, so it's not as great in the roll. But with the LRM 111 and the SRM of 11 at medium and long, or short and medium, it does have the ability to use alternate munitions, including stuff that is NARC capable. It has the ability to use Inferno rounds for SRMs. I think there are mine laying rounds for the LRMs. There's smoke rounds for the LRMs to give other units cover. It's much more of a toolbox mech than the 8R. Well, that wraps up the bi-weekly dose of mech tech for you. So, I mean, I guess that's about it for the night, day, whatever it is where you are. Like I said, I'm not picky. Just hope you're listening. So I want to remind everybody, we do have a Facebook group, the Unicorn Company Podcast Facebook group. And I'm hoping probably within a month I should have a Patreon set up. I'm still trying to figure out what to do as far as rewards, maybe pre-recording the mech techs and, you know, letting you have early access, because I do record the episodes roughly within 48 hours of release, and then edit them the next day and then put them out the day after, simply because that allows me to squeeze in as much news as I possibly can and, you know, see all the goings on right up until I podcast, which I know it gives me a little bit of an interesting position where other podcasts are like every month. But, you know, I feel like this allows me to get a good grasp on things right before I release, edit anything I need to edit, and then go from there. So y'all have a great day, great day, great evening, great whatever it is where you are. I will get you more information about the tournament in North Carolina as soon as I can. And I also plan on having a very interesting episode for you in 2 weeks, because I think we need to have a discussion about the, I don't know if there are actually as many as everybody think, but the Warhammer 40K community and what that means for us as far as integration into the BattleTech community for those who are coming over. See you later.